What's up, guys? It's Jamie Grace, and welcome to the Jamie Grace Podcast. Happy Saturday. If you've never been here before, my word, I just want to say thank you so much for hopping onto the show, for listening today. I'm really, really, really pumped that you're here. If you have listened before, then you know what's up. I'm going to rant about some stuff, talk about some stuff, and today's episode, honestly, is something that is super, super important to me. We're going to be talking about foster care, we're going to be talking about adoption, and why I talk about it so often. I know I'm a singer-songwriter, and it's kind of like, oh, okay, you talk about music a lot, but then randomly I'll just be like, hey guys, I want to tell you about foster care on like my Instagram story or my Facebook. And people are oftentimes like, excuse me, were you adopted? Or like, you know, did your parents adopt one of your siblings? Like, why are you talking about this so much? So I'm going to explain that today. I'm going to share that with you guys today. And I am so excited that you are along to listen to this and check out what I have to say. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome to the Jamie Grace Podcast, produced by me, Jamie Grace of 91. From Team Single to Wait It Out, this podcast has had many names, but the heart remains. I rant and give my thoughts and advice on pop culture, wellness, dating, and relationships with sarcasm and sincerity. I hope you like it, maybe even love it, and consider subscribing and sharing if you do. All right, friends. So recently I shared on social media that my husband and I were watching a series on Hulu called The Day I Picked My Parents. And there's so many different things that can be learned from that documentary series. So we were recommending it on social media. And then someone reached out, Lori, via Patreon. And she was saying, I just started watching it because of your recommendation. And I was curious, what was the spark that fueled your passion for people in the foster care system? It means so much to you. And I'd love to know how your love for them began to grow. So Lori reached out via Patreon, which I love when you guys send me DMs and ask me questions on Instagram, or even if you ask on Twitter. The easiest way to get a hold of me is on Patreon. It's an exclusive community. They get one extra episode a month, for supporting my music and stuff like that. And you can find out more at patreon.com/JamieGrace or in the show notes, but let's go ahead and jump into this question. So I just whacked my elbow on the desk, which is kind of a classic Jamie Grace situation for every episode. So here's the thing. When I was a kid, I always say that my parents were foster parents, but that's a bit misleading if you actually know a bit about the foster care system. It's just that saying that my parents were foster parents is oftentimes one of the easiest ways to explain the dynamic of our family, and just also one of the ways to respect the privacy for a lot of the, you know, young adults that you might maybe one day meet. If I'm like playing a show when I have one of my foster siblings like with me, it's just a way to better protect like their privacy and their story without digging into all of the details as to how they got to know us. But the technical concept, I'll give you kind of a broad concept for why my sister and I had extra brothers and sisters every few years. So my mom and dad are pastors, and they love their community. They love their community very well. And it was just very much known that they were available to help and to love and to serve the church community, the local community. And if they could not do this personally, then they would find someone that could. So there were times where a parent might be in a rehab situation, they might be incarcerated, or they, for other reasons, mental health issues, whatever it might be, they weren't able to parent at the time. And so my parents would oftentimes step in as just guardians for those children temporarily and help those parents get back on their feet. I think I just said guardians for the parents. I meant to say guardians for the children, but I guess guardians for the parents as well, because they were very pro helping these families get back on their feet, if that was a possibility for the parents to, you know, be reunified with their kids in the future after, like I said, rehabilitation or incarceration, or whatever that might look like. So the goal of foster care is actually quite similar. The goal of foster care is reunification. Now, I'm not a professional here. I'm not a social worker. So, you know, I can't claim to be able to give all of the exact phrases and, you know, ideal definitions. I will definitely leave some links if you guys are interested in learning more, which I really hope that you are. But the goal of foster care is to provide respite, to provide a safe place for children while their parents are hopeless hopefully able to do the work to be in a better place to parent. So a lot of times people might think like, oh, kids in foster care, like maybe they did something wrong. And like, chances are they did not. Like that's not why kids are in foster care. A lot of times it's because imperfect people like you and I are unable to parent at the time. And so the goal of foster care is to put these children into foster homes where these parents have gone through classes and courses and training to understand, you know, the trauma that the children may have experienced, the teenagers may have experienced. And then they are a temporary place for those children until they can go back home. And unfortunately, what happens a lot of times with foster care is, you know, just imagine like the phrase hurt people, right? So imagine like when we're having a difficult day and we're maybe not as kind as we should be to our friends or family or whoever, you know, a lot of times with children with foster care, they might end up going to different homes because the dynamics might not be healthy for them in the home they were placed in. And then there are some people in the foster care system that aren't in it for the right reasons. And so it might not be a healthy situation for them. So then you have children that are going from home to home. Then you have kids that are going back home, but their parents might not have been ready just yet, or they might have another misstep. There are a lot of complexities, a lot of issues with the system in and of itself. A lot of times I'm not here to make any like broad accusations, but there are a lot of people that are quite overworked when it comes to social workers and caseworkers. They've got a lot on their plate. Some things get overlooked. And so there are a lot of different dynamics that make this a really complex situation for a lot of people involved. But the people that end up getting hurt the most are the children, are the teenagers that are growing up in the system without a lot of stability in their lives. And so that's something that my parents knew and understood from early in their marriage, yes, but also before they got married. The first child that they took in, they weren't living together at the time. They weren't married, and she was living with my mom. And so she kind of like, I think she like, you know, saw them as mom and dad, even though they were only dating at the time, my mom and dad were. But even now, like 20, 30 years later, I say 20, 30 years later, because I genuinely couldn't remember like how old I was. So like literally that was about 30 years ago at this point. She's still a part of our family. You know, there was never a legal adoption process. Her biological mother has passed away, but she still does refer to her as her mom. And my mom and dad are like bonus parents that she had in some very formative years to help guide her through some really challenging things. And she's like a bonus sister to my sister and I. And so that was like very normal for us growing up to have kids living with us at the time, or for, you know, different amounts of time. I'm not sure if it was clear, if that was or possibly even confusing, but the first girl that did live with my parent or with my mom, like I said, before they were living together, before they were married, you know, Morgan and I weren't born. My sister and I weren't born yet. So that was the only child that lived within like our family dynamic before we were born. And then the next child didn't come into our home until I was maybe like 2 or 3 years old. And they were younger than me. And then everybody else was younger than me until like, I think when we were in high school, there were no, if I'm not mistaken, no, there was one placement in high school. And then college, I don't think my parents had any placements. And that is when my parents kind of started to, kind of the same model, but more so with teenagers and young adults. Some kids that have, you know, been like runaways and things like that. And so the dynamic changed a little bit because I wasn't as involved. But it was still kind of the same in that this was like a brother or a sister that I had. And I knew like, oh, this person's living with my parents for a few months. And they're simply a part of the family. So this is kind of like, you know, this is a part of just who my family is culturally. I mean, this is definitely a mix of Black culture. It's a very kind of, I don't want to say normal thing in Black culture, but most Black families, I would say, have at least like an aunt or a cousin or somebody that kind of has this home, a home like this, where they are walking with a child or walking with a teenager as their parent is going through some very significant life change. And And so that's kind of a little bit of a thing culturally for Black people, but then also it's kind of a thing culturally for Southern families. I've noticed a lot. And again, I'm not saying like every single household, but almost every family I know from the South, whether they're Black or white, you know, they can say like, they know someone, right, that may not have like a foster care license, but they're helping to take care of someone else's children. And then, you know, also in Christian culture, I do think sometimes when we're talking about culture, I do think that the concept of like a hero syndrome can start to be misconstrued in all this. And I won't get into that too much in this episode, because then I'll just get mad and then this will turn into something that I don't want it to be. But, you know, so that's not what I'm talking about here, where it's like, oh, like Christian culture of like saving the kids. Like, no, I don't believe that that's what this is at all. I think, you know, the Bible talks a lot about like all of us being imperfect and making mistakes. And so I believe that it's our responsibility to take care of each other when someone falls down. And that looks different for every person, right? Like, and the Bible also specifically talks about orphans. And I don't think that that's specifically talking about like, oh, their mom and dad have both passed away. Like sometimes it could be a temporary situation, and I don't have time to like totally like translate like scripture and stuff. But what I'm getting at is that it is a thing for us culturally in many ways, just as I said, Black culture and Southern culture and Christian culture as well. And so that is just the family dynamic that I grew up with: a biological mom and dad, my sister, they're also her biological mom and dad, but also some really cool bonus brothers and sisters along the way. So that's, I'd say, what started it, but like my passion for that. But at the same time, it's also just been a part of who I am since I was a kid. And I think part of that has to do with my family. But some of it, like I said, it's just who I am. I remember seeing like Wednesday's Child, which I think happens in different states, where there are children on the news that are in the foster care system and they're like featured, if you will, to try to get a foster family. Which, can we just take a moment to talk about like how sad that is, to like there are not enough families pursuing to adopt or foster. Let's use the word foster in this case. There are not enough families seeking to foster children, and there are not enough resources out there to rebuild families, that there are times where children are on television making a pitch to be adopted or to be fostered. That is heartbreaking. And so I remember seeing that on the news, and I signed my family up for a catalog, which is even sadder, y'all. They send you this catalog in the mail, and it's called My Turn Now in the state of Georgia. And it's a whole catalog full of children that need to be adopted or fostered. And I mean, I don't really know how anybody can look at that and just like look away. But at the same time, everybody has a different calling, right? Like, because not everybody is going to be able to foster and adopt, right? Like, there are 400,000 children in the system right now. 100,000 of those children, or over 400,000, 100,000 of those children are, it's called TPR, which is like a termination of parental rights. And that's already happened. And so that means that those children are legally able to be adopted. So just if we look at the statistics of like how many people are in the world, it's just not practical for everybody to adopt, right? But I was one of those kids where like, or just humans, where I saw this catalog of just faces and biographies of children. And I was just like, well, I will be one, you know, like, I know that that is a calling that God has had on my, that God has on my life. And again, it's not to be a savior. It's not to be a hero. It's not to try to claim someone else's like child as my own. Like, of course, the ultimate goal is to reunify a child with their parent. You know, so I knew as a kid that that was something that I wanted to be a part of, was just helping how I can and pitching in how I can. And so, so that was also a huge part of it. Hey, y'all, I wanted to take a quick moment to share with you some info about one of my favorite sponsors of the Jamie Grace podcast. Y'all, when quarantine first started, I was not very interested in this whole online counseling thing because it made me really anxious. And as someone that has anxiety, I had to figure something out because a lot of things make me anxious. Eventually, I gave it a try, and I have to say that it's been very beneficial for me. So I want you guys, if you need to check out Faithful Counseling. Whether you have an anxiety diagnosis or you are dealing with the everyday frustrations of life, I can promise you that you will find it beneficial to talk to a counselor through Faithful Counseling. You can go to faithfulcounseling.com/Jamie Grace to learn more about the very affordable counseling that they have and the 4 different ways you can communicate with a clinical therapist. And if you'd like, they can incorporate some faith-based things as well into your counseling. Visit faithfulcounseling.com/Jamie Grace. That's faithfulcounseling.com/Jamie Grace. I did not tell my parents. I was only like 6 or 7 years old, and I did not tell them that I signed them up for that catalog. So they were a little bit confused when it arrived at the house addressed. I think it was addressed to them, and I really wanted them to adopt for sure. I will also say too, I want to make sure I clarify. I had this kind of like moment too in my childhood where it was something that I wanted to do, and I'm like moving in my chair a lot. I promise I'm not tooting, but I had this like moment as a kid where I wanted my parents to adopt so bad. Like I, you know, got the catalog and everything. I would call the number and like leave voicemails and like tell them to call my parents back and stuff. Like I wanted it to happen so bad, and my parents never became licensed foster parents. They almost did like 4 years ago. We actually had a placement of 3 little kids, which was the first time in like, it had almost been like 10 years since they had little kids in the house. And that was really fun because my parents aren't like old, but they're getting older. So I kind of like co-parented with them. So that was really cool to get to like be a part of those kids' lives. But anyways, I wanted my parents to do this so bad, y'all. And so I was like doing all this stuff. And every single time, I kid you not, every single time my parents would be like, okay, we're going to go to a meeting. Because if you want to be a foster parent, the first thing you do is you go to like an information meeting. It's like a no obligation necessary because of COVID. Most meetings are like Zoom meetings, and you just like kind of sit down for an hour and they tell you all about stuff based on your county and, you know, the numbers and how many kids, and kind of make sure you're not, you know, just kind of tell you more info. So every time my parents would like get ready to go to a meeting, like get ready to schedule one, something happened with me. So when I was 9, that was when my symptoms, that was when I was like really like, mom, we gotta do this. And they were like, okay, we're gonna go, you know, we're gonna get some more info, set up a phone call, find a local meeting, yada yada. And then my symptoms of Tourette syndrome started showing up. And if you know anything about my story, that was a very intense time. And so my parents were like, there's no way, you know, we can proceed with doing anything else right now because, you know, Jamie's health is a lot, which is understandable. And then I remember again, I was like 11, and that was when like my diagnosis came in, and that was when like they really had to start like figuring stuff out. And then again, when I was like 15, and that was when I just kind of had another shift in my health and was getting ready to go off to college and stuff. So it was like 3 different times that my parents were like, okay, we're going to go check this out. And not so much like, well, I guess it was kind of because like, well, they wanted to do it for sure. But it was also because like, look, you know, we want to like honor that this is something that our child really wants us to check out. Like they were perfectly content with, you know, just like being these bonus guardians, if you will, temporary guardians to, you know, this respite care for these children in need. And I just remember like at some point in my early teens, I just remember like God kind of like speaking to me and being like, like the reason why I kept using you as an interruption is because I was calling you to do this. And that was hard on me because I, you know, as a teenager, I knew that I couldn't be a foster parent at the time. And so it was hard on me because then it started this whole journey of waiting. And then it started this whole spark and like just this whole aspect of just like waiting, which was, that'll have to be a whole nother episode about like my journey to foster care that never happened. Because when I tell you like, well, yeah, I'll save that for another episode. Let me know like on Twitter and Instagram, like it can be an unrelated post that you comment on. That's fine. I just want to know if you guys want that episode. Because that was a whole different situation, a whole nother story. But yeah, so that's where my heart for foster care started. And then Okay, Adobe Flash Player, please update Adobe. Leave me alone. I'm not even, I don't even need this right now. I'm at work. sorry, something just like popped up on my computer. I'm so confused. Okay, so then there's a third thing too, which to me is like, to me is the most like, I don't know, the most personal. So bear with me. So I've told you about the culture of my family. And I told you about the, you know, my community getting involved there. And then there's like the straight up calling, which I already kind of hinted to that because all three of these things work so beautifully together. But when I was about 7 years old, I think I was maybe even five, six, seven, when I was little, so my dad works, he's a pastor, but he's an electrician by trade. So he did a lot of work with blueprints. So I was like, oh, let me go get like a blue crayon and draw out a blueprint. And I drew this house with a blue crayon with like all these rooms and all these kids. And it was called Gracie's Place. And now I want y'all to know that like, obviously as I've become an adult, I've realized that there has been a lot of like, fantasizing of like adoption culture and orphan culture. And I don't even like using that word. And I'm so sorry if that sounded distasteful, but there's just been a lot of like fantasizing of it. You know, like the movie Annie, for example, it's a great movie, but we should not use that as like the realistic expectation of what actual trauma looks like. You know what I mean? And so I did have like a love for movies about adoption culture or like orphanages or, what's the other word, boarding schools, because I just kind of always had a fascination with it. And I mean, I was a child, but as I've become an adult, I've, you know, the lens that I see through is much different now. Anyways, I say all that to say, after seeing all these movies, it sparked me to want to draw the blueprint for Gracie's Place. And I remember every time, I specifically remember when my parents first asked me, they were like, what's Gracie's Place? And I was like, oh, this is a home for all the orphans and all the children that don't have a home and they can come live here. And I just remember like my mom being like, oh, it's like an orphanage. And I was like, no, mom, it's not an orphanage. It's a home. And she was like, well, if it's a home, like where are all their, like, where are their, like their parents? Like who's going to adopt them? Who's going to adopt them? And I just like looked at her and I said, me. I've known since I was little, like that was something that was on my heart. And like I said, as I've grown, as I've become an adult, as I've learned a lot more about culture, and as I prayerfully continue to learn by listening to adoptees, I mean, their voices are so important in conversations like these. This is not just about like, oh, this is what I want to do to help. Like, no, you have to listen and learn, and it has to be a daily thing. It can't just be like I listened to a podcast, so now I know what I'm doing. It's like, I'm listening to conversations about adoptees. My cousins were adopted, you know, into our family. I have cousins that were adopted as well. And so I'm listening to them and like having these difficult conversations and continually checking myself to make sure that, you know, my heart is in the right place and that it's never like, oh, because I want to grow my family. It's like, no, the goal should be to, you know, reunify children, keep them as closely connected to their home and family and culture as possible. And in the event that those things are not possible, you know, then we move toward adoption, permanent situations and stuff like that. So I want to make that very, very clear. And that's something that I'm continually learning. But I just wanted to give a little bit of a backstory as to why it's so important to me and why I talk about it so much. You know, I think about one of the placements that we had and, I think about the trauma that those children experienced, and it's not at all my business to share their story, but I know for a fact that it would not be healthy for them to have connection to their biological family. But then I also think about one of my cousins who recently reconnected with her biological family, and it's been one of the most beautiful and healthy and just empowering things that's ever happened to her or happened for her, forgive me. So there's a lot to unpack in the conversation of adoption and foster care and things like that. But that's just like, that's a little bit of my backstory. That's a little bit of my heart, where I come from and why I talk about it a lot, why I'm passionate about it. One of my favorite statistics, but also the saddest statistic in the world, is that if every single church in America would foster one, if one family from every single church in America would foster one child, there will be no more waiting children. There would only be waiting families. Can y'all believe that? Like, as much as we, the church, we talk about like loving lives and wanting to take care of lives, yet, sorry. Actually, I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry at all. I said I didn't want to get angry in this episode. And it's like, it's not even about like, oh, if every church fostered every child. No. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about if every church fostered one child, right? So one family from every church, okay? And then another family from that church. Like, we're just averaging if there's 50 families in a church. And that's erring very much on the side of caution, yeah? If there are 50 families, let's say 55 families in every church, then like all the other families, all we're doing is asking, like, can all these families provide one meal a week for the family that's fostering? Like, as a mom, and I only have one kid, but as a mom, if someone committed to making us dinner once a week, like, that would just take so much stress off of my plate. You know what I mean? Now, granted, I love to cook, so I just know stuff gets misconstrued. So I don't want somebody to be like, oh my gosh, like, are you complaining about your daughter? No, I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that if we're talking about what people deem as a small church, they can still make a difference. We're not asking every single family in every single church to adopt or to foster. That's not practical. Not all children need to be adopted, but a lot of children do need a safe haven while their parents are building, a community to, oh my gosh, my sister just texted me the most dramatic text message in the world. She is so goofy. Not every child needs to be adopted, but so many children do need to be fostered and do need a temporary safe haven, a temporary place while their parents are getting those resources. And so what if the other families in that church or the families in another church that is, they're not fostering, they're helping the parents rebuild and recover and, you know, do whatever it is they need to do. I'm telling y'all, if we stepped up to the plate when it comes to life and loving life well and pushing past our pride and our desire for what things should look like and the way they should be, if we could do that, y'all, we could change the world. Okay. That's not what this episode was supposed to be about, but it's about to go there and it doesn't need to. Anyways, that's why I'm really passionate about foster care. That's where it all comes from. Next episode, maybe in a couple of weeks, I will share the reason why, what's it called? I'll share my journey of foster care and how that has not happened and all the ways that I thought it was going to happen. Yet, as I said, it has not. But next week, very specifically, there's an episode for single people. And I'm really excited about that. So if you're single, next week's episode is for you. I was in a really bad mood. I was really mad at married people. And I was like, I want to make this episode for singles. I made it just for you. All right. I have a TV interview in 5 minutes. So I should get ready for that. Thank you guys so much for listening to my podcast. Hit me up on Instagram at Jamie Grace H. And if you liked this episode and you want to get bonus episodes, an extra show every Wednesday, go ahead and hit up patreon.com/Jamie Grace. It's only $5 a month, and every single person there is a part of helping me be able to create music, podcasts, episodes, and videos. So thank you so much in advance. I will see you on the internet somewhere. Okay, bye.